Bound, written by Donna Jo Napoli, narrated by Kathleen Moranti. For Michael Chen, who introduced me to the three perfections, and for Li Ying and Yu Ten Chen, who helped me to try to understand them. Acknowledgements. Thanks to my family, first and foremost, for suggestions all along the way, and to Alan Berkowitz, Norian Caparoli Berkowitz, Li Yang, and Yu Te Chen, Sish Wang, Li Qing Mayer, and Richard Chen for comments on earlier versions. Thanks also to Victor Mayer for allowing me to read his forthcoming article, The First Recorded Cinderella Story, and to Haley Kong for answering some of my questions about Ming China. A special thanks to Mary Raindorp and her second period, sixth grade language arts class at Strathaven Middle School in fall 2003. And most fundamental thanks go to Brenda Bowen, Jordan Brown, and Cindy Nixon. Any errors that remain are my own. Chapter 1. Xing Xing squatted by the water, silent and unmoving. Her stillness was a prayer. It was answered. The sun glinted red. Only an instant, and it was over. But there could be no doubt. Her eyes had not played tricks. A white fish with red fins and golden eyes zipped past and under a lotus leaf. She laughed in delight. "Lazy one, bring the firewood," came the distant call. In the past year, Lazy One had practically become Xing Xing's household name. She imagined her father's wife holding one hand above her eyes against the sun that was so bright today. It had already burned off the morning fog. She imagined her frowning in impatience, then ducking back into the shadows of the cave. The girl picked up the armful of wood she'd gathered and rushed back along the path. Her hair was tied in two hanging knots that thumped on her shoulders as she ran. "Hurry," they drummed. "Hurry, hurry." The cold dirt licked at her feet. "Hurry, hurry." But she was wrong. Stepmother had not gone inside. The woman shivered in the chill of spring, arms crossed over her chest. "Get inside, lazy one." She yanked one of Xing Xing's hair knots as the girl raced past through the open door. The air of the main cavern had changed already. While the roof was so thick that the temperature hardly varied from summer to winter, the quality of the air could change drastically. Right now, it had grown clammy. Xing Xing knelt and fed tinder to the coals of the dying fire, then sticks, then the wood she just brought in. The door squeaked shut behind her. Stepmother didn't oil the hinges on purpose, because the noise scared away demons. Xing Xing got to her feet and turned around to find stepmother standing right there, her hands on her hips, her muscled arms cocked like wings. "Wood doesn't grow from springs," said stepmother. Xing Xing knew this was stepmother's way of asking why'd she come from the direction of the pond rather than the woods. She'd seen the beautiful pool fish twice now, yesterday afternoon, and again this morning. It was her secret. Stubbornness entered her. She looked in stepmother's eyes without blinking.
"But water does."
Stepmother hobbled over and picked up the water bucket and carrying pole. She hobbled back and put one in each of Xing Xing's hands.
"Are you waiting for grass to grow under your feet?"
Xing Xing ran out the door again, leaving it open. She rushed through the buzz of the bees they kept in the hive on the side of their cave.
"Rush, rush, bzz, bzz. My daughter will wake soon," called stepmother after her, "and hunger hurts."
Xing Xing returned to the pond, only too happily. She filled the bucket, then walked around the edge, looking. The thought of stepmother's daughter waking and complaining of hunger quickened her pace. It wasn't that her half-sister would be truly hungry. Not like the old beggar men who wandered the village, hands outstretched, and slept at night under the raised floor of the public pavilion. Rather, her half-sister's stomach would simply have emptied of the meal she ate last night. But she felt so poorly these days that Xing Xing didn't want to allow even that small amount of extra discomfort.
Besides, her complaints could result in a smack on the head for Xing Xing. Xing Xing was practically running now. The fish didn't show itself. Well, of course not. Secrets could never be rushed. They had to come of their own accord, on their own schedule. That way, when they came, they offered themselves as a gift. Xing Xing leaned over the water, extending her right cheek till she could feel the wetness that hovered in the air close to the pond's surface. "Later," she sang. Then she stood and turned in a circle, lifting her chin so both her cheeks could brush the dry air. This was her way of caressing the spirit of her mother, so that she could feel close by. She balanced the bucket on one end of the pole and put the other end over her shoulder, then walked home without spilling a drop. Chapter 2. Wei Ping slept sideways across the bed, with her legs dangling over the edge. Her mother, stepmother, had rolled the rock from the high hole that served as a window, so sunbeams played on her chest. She opened her eyes, rose to sitting, and stretched one thin leg. Her face grimaced with pain as she rubbed behind that knee. She did the same to the other leg. A tear escaped and ran down her cheek. Her lips tightened into a wide line. She looked at the gaily colored bandages around her feet, and the very corners of her mouth rose in satisfaction. Xing Xing could tell Wei Ping was admiring herself, an immodest act that one should avoid both practicing and witnessing in others. Xing Xing looked down at her own feet, but too late, for Wei Ping happened to glance at her first. "No one cares about your feet," hissed Wei Ping. She grabbed one of the stools waiting by the bedstead and searched around for the other. It had somehow tumbled out of reach. "Get me that stool, lazy one." Xing Xing pushed the stool to her half-sister. Wei Ping knelt with one knee on each stool and took a loud, deep breath. Then she threw her weight on one knee and moved the other stool forward with her hands. She threw her weight on the other knee and moved the second stool forward with her hands. In this manner, she worked her way over to the Kang, never putting weight on her feet. The Kang was the most used piece of furniture in their home, where one could eat and talk, and sew and even nap. It was adjacent to the stove, with a fire passage inside its stone slabs. Heat from the cooking fire passed under it, then out through the chimney in the roof of the cave. As Wei Ping passed Xing Xing, she spat on her toes. "No one will find you a husband." Xing Xing knew words spoken in pain could be far crueler than the speaker really intended. Still, she had to bite the insides of her cheeks to hold in a gasp. For what Wei Ping had said was true enough to cut deep. Xing Xing's mother had died when Xing Xing was 7 years old. She and stepmother had lived side by side in the cave as the two wives of the master potter Wu, who had himself died a year ago, when Xing Xing was but 13. With no father or mother, there was no one to arrange a marriage for Xing Xing. Wei Ping was only a year older than Xing Xing, but stepmother had already begun preparations for finding her a husband. Indeed, she started within a month of Wu's death. Wei Ping had a face that was neither plain nor pretty, but she was slender as a reed, exactly as men preferred their wives. If she'd had her feet bound at the age of 6, when stepmother had first proposed it to Wu, her feet would be small enough to fit in a man's hand like a golden lotus blossom, and she'd already undoubtedly be betrothed. But though both of Wu's wives had tiny bound feet, the potter didn't want his daughter's feet bound. He had grown up way down south, where not so many women bound their feet, and he didn't like the custom. Besides, he had enjoyed the assistance of his daughters in his shop, and that work required them to have full use of their feet. Stepmother had argued that Wu could hire labor for the shop or buy a slave girl to help out. After all, they hired labor to help in the household chores. The potter wouldn't hear of it. If strangers saw him at work, they might sell the secrets of his special ways to other potters. Stepmother had argued that despite her small size, Xing Xing was exceptionally strong, while Wei Ping was delicate. Xing Xing could do the work of both girls. But the potter said that exalting the daughter Wei Ping over the daughter Xing Xing would go precisely contrary to his dead wife's wishes. Anyway, out here in the country, foot binding generally didn't start till a girl reached puberty, unlike in the city, where it started sometimes even before the child turned 6. Stepmother lamented, she'd wake her husband in the morning with her hand in front of his face, fingers spread to the length of Wei Ping's feet, screeching about Zhang growth, and quoting sayings from the first teacher, Kung Fu Zi, Master Kong, about doing the right thing at the right moment. Still, Wu insisted that stepmother wait. Once he was dead, though, the woman lost no time. Wei Ping's feet were already as long as the full spread of stepmother's fingers, much longer than Xing Xing's feet. But the woman swore that with the proper binding, they could shrink. Xing Xing drained the pot of boiling water chestnuts. Then she poured them onto the mat tray and shook the tray gently so they'd roll around and cool off faster. Wei Ping moaned from the kang.
Lazy one, said stepmother. My daughter is hungry.
Xing Xing knew the moan was because Wei Ping's feet hurt, but no one was allowed to talk about that. Besides, Xing Xing avoided saying anything to stepmother unless it was absolutely necessary. She peeled the steaming nuts as fast as she could, blowing on her fingers the whole time. Chapter 3. Stepmother sat on the stone bench outside the cave entrance sewing. She was making a fine dress for Wei Ping. Xing Xing passed behind her, quiet as a plumed egret. Flat feet make noise no matter what, said stepmother, even stunted ones like yours. She pulled a strip of cloth out of her purse tied to her sleeve and held it out to Xing Xing. My daughter needs meat for supper. Xing Xing's mouth twisted in worry. She was a poor hunter of land creatures. The range of things stepmother expected her to do kept growing. This was the third time within a month that she handed Xing Xing that hunting cloth. But Wei Ping really did need meat. When Xing Xing washed her half-sister's foot bandages, she had to scrub hard to get the bloodstains out. And lately, Wei Ping's feet oozed a foul-smelling yellow liquid that seemed to drain away her energy. Meat brought energy, and Xing Xing knew a good hunter. So the girl tied the cloth around her waist and ran down the hill to the edge of the village, where Tang, the master painter, lived, calling out softly,
"See me, mother? I'm going to visit Master Tang."
The master sat outside in his courtyard under the tangled branches of a willow, smoothing the hairs on his paintbrushes. The yellow finches in the cage that swung above his head twittered to the sounds of the large arrow bamboo leaves rustling in the breeze. The orchid pots Xing Xing's own father had made stood grouped together in one corner. Surrounding them were ink-green indigo plants. She bowed deeply, then sat on her heels beside the old man.
"Ah, the hunting cloth serves as your belt, pretty child," said Master Tang. "My boy is already in the woods, alas. He will bring home only as much as our household needs."
Xing Xing kept her breath steady in her disappointment. She had, in fact, guessed the situation, since the slave boy was nowhere in sight. Master Tang's boy typically stayed by the old man's side if he was home. "But I am in need of some assistance at the moment. If an hour's labor interests you, I could offer you a sack of pollywogs as your payment." Pollywogs swirled in profusion in the rushes at the sides of the slow river that hugged the bottom of the hill near Xing Xing's cave. Master Tang had a taste for frogs, so every spring he had his slave boy fill outdoor tubs with pollywogs. That way, when they matured, he could eat frogs at the slightest whim with no weight. The last thing Xing Xing wanted was pollywogs. Watching frogs made her laugh. She couldn't bear to eat them.
Master Tang had always been good to her, however. He and Father had been friends, and until just a year ago, he had been one of her teachers. Before Potter Wu moved to this area, no one had heard of an ordinary person getting an education. None of the boys around here were educated, much less the girls. But Wu had his own ways. Some people hadn't liked him because of that. They said he gave himself airs. He acted as though he thought he was better than they were, when he was nothing but a simple potter. Master Tang wasn't like that. Master Tang had been Father's true friend.
"Thank you for your kindness, Venerable Elder." Xingxing bowed her head.
"Come." Master Tang led Xingxing inside, to the room where he painted. She knew her task would be to copy a poem onto the master's latest painting. She was good at calligraphy. Master Tang told her she was very good. Father used to stand over Xingxing and Wei Ping for hours as they worked on calligraphy. He spoke of the three incomparables, the three perfections, painting, poetry, calligraphy. Master Tang instructed the girls in painting. His wife instructed them in poetry. But Father himself instructed them in calligraphy. Perhaps that's why Xingxing excelled in the third perfection. When Father was alive, she had worked hard for his approval, much harder than Wei Ping ever had. After Father died, Wei Ping stopped all her lessons. She never wanted those lessons in the first place, and now the pain in her feet broke her concentration, and she couldn't leave the cave anyway. Stepmother was relieved. An educated girl would be harder to marry off. That Xingxing should continue her lessons alone was out of the question. Nevertheless, each day when Xingxing visited Father's grave to say hello and apologize again for not having been at his side when he died, she practiced calligraphy in the dry dirt over the point where she imagined his stomach to be. After all, wisdom resided in the stomach, and she wanted Father's wisdom to refine her motions. She wanted his guidance and approval even more these days than she had when he was alive. Her art had not deteriorated in the period since his death. Xingxing sat on the floor now and looked carefully at Master Tang's new painting. In the foreground was a home on a cliff with a pear tree in blossom. In the background, a bay cradled by mountains. This was a scene from the long, long coastline that Xingxing had never seen. Master Tang had once lived in a coastal town near where the Yangtze River emptied into the huge ocean. He painted from memory. Xingxing unlocked the closet where Master Tang kept all the supplies. She took out, first of all, the inlaid box that held the top-quality inkstone, then the ink, then, for visual harmony, the same brush that Master Tang had used to paint this picture. There was an old pear tree in Master Tang's courtyard, right near the casillas. She went to stand by it and opened her nostrils, letting the fragrance of the flowers float inside her before she took the cap off the paintbrush. For the next hour, Xingxing dipped that finest brush in the blackest ink mixed on the most beautiful inkstone with loving care. She copied the poem on Master Tang's painting. She wrote between the mountains and the bellied sails of a boat at sea. They were not words in the sky or in the sea. Ridiculous thought. They were words simply in space. If a painting called for words, as most did, there was always a space that held those words perfectly. Father had taught her that, for she had sometimes added words to the bowls or vases he made. She sang the poem to herself as she worked. It was brief, but every poem was worthy of extreme attention, and this one pleased her very much. "Pear blossoms fall soft white, recalling snow past beyond sight, revealing warmth ahead in sun's light." The poem Xingxing knew came from the mouth of Master Tang's only remaining wife, Mei Zi, the wife who had instructed both Xingxing and Wei Ping in poetry, and whose hands were too twisted with arthritis now to be entrusted with the painting. The girl hoped that the warmth ahead in summer sun would hurry and ease the old woman's suffering. Chapter 4. Xingxing's first thought was to free the pollywogs Master Tang had given her into the spring-fed pool near her home. But then she thought of the beautiful fish in that pool. A mature frog could eat a fish that size. She changed directions and went instead to the river rushes, where she opened the small sack and watched the pollywogs gleefully escape. They had four legs already, but their tails still remained frog, but not yet fully frog. Then she headed for the woods. If she was lucky, she'd pass Master Tang's slave boy and beg him to catch her at least a few quails. The boy was clearly sweet on her. He gaped whenever she passed. Xingxing did nothing to encourage his attentions. Her life was far too busy with obeying stepmother and caring for father's spirit to think about such things yet. Whenever the boy did her a favor, she always made sure she did him a favor in return, so as never to be beholden to him. But she didn't expect to be lucky enough to pass him in the woods now. One of the reasons the boy was such a good hunter was that he moved so silently and swiftly that the animals didn't realize he was near. It wasn't likely that Xingxing would be able to detect him. She walked quietly herself, but in order to be that quiet, she had to move very slowly. Faint squeals came from somewhere close off to the right. Xingxing held her breath and followed the sounds. In a clearing at the foot of a large pine was a raccoon kit. Another came squealing behind it, and a third scrabbled out from under a scrub brush. Xingxing looked around quickly. Kits this young would undoubtedly still be under the care of a mother, and mother raccoons were fierce. She stooped and picked up a rock, more for protection than anything else. No sensible hunter would kill a mother before her young could survive on their own. The mother didn't come, however, and soon enough, Xingxing realized things were amiss. The kit stumbled around, but not in the fashion of babes just learning to walk. Rather, they walked fine, but they tripped over rocks and knocked into the trunk of the pine. The girl came closer, checking over her shoulder for the mother. The kit stopped, their noses twitching. They'd caught her scent. Now they ran in panic in three directions, falling and slamming into things as they went. Why, they were blind. The poor things, they'd never survive on their own, and that's why the mother was nowhere around, of course. She must have realized something was wrong and simply left them to their fate. Xingxing stopped moving. Within minutes, the kit squealed again. After all, if the strange scent had been a mortal threat, it would have attacked by now. They grouped together, linked by sound and scent. If she abandoned them as the mother had done, they'd be dead by evening. Sooner, probably. They were meat to any passing carnivore, no matter what Xingxing did. Wei Ping needed meat. Xingxing untied the hunting cloth from around her waist. She put the rock in it and slung it hard at the kit. The little thing didn't even let out a cry. But the thump of the rock scared the other two. They screamed and ran in circles. Xingxing wiped at her nose, which always ran when she was sad. It was unnatural to kill babies, but it made no sense not to kill these. In fact, a swift death with a stone was more humane than letting them be ripped limb from limb by a wolf. She took the rock and slung it hard at another kit. It missed the mark. She fetched it before she lost her resolve and slung it again. The kit fell dead. Xingxing picked up a dead kit in each hand. Then she sank to her knees, her arms as limp by her sides as the small bodies in her hands. "Mother," she called out. "Stay with me, mother." The spirit of her mother brushed her cheeks. The girl closed her eyes and let the spirit brush her eyelids, her ears, her temples, her lips. Now the spirit brushed the back of her right hand. It took a nip. Ouch! Xingxing opened her eyes. The third kid had gone from testing her hand to nosing his dead brother. If she didn't stop him fast, he'd turn cannibal. Xingxing let herself fall onto the live kit so that he was caught under her pelvis. She quickly closed her skirts around him, trapping him there with one hand while she gathered up the hunting cloth and the two dead kits with the other.
Chapter 5. Stepmother's eyebrows, which always arched high in the thinnest of pencil lines, arched even higher at the sight of the dead kits. But when she realized the live kit was blind, she nodded in silent accord. She opened an old birdcage on the floor, and Xingxing guided the kit into it.
"We'll feed him, and when he's big and plump, we'll eat hearty," said Stepmother.
"No, no, it's better that he should be a pet," said Wei Ping. "I can play with him."
"Wild creatures make poor pets," said Stepmother, but she spoke hesitantly.
Xingxing watched the conflict in her face. Pain rendered her daughter practically a prisoner these days. Indeed, the girl was still sitting on the kang, where she'd been since she woke. She needed amusement. Anyone could hear that in the strain of her voice.
Stepmother got the knife and set to cleaning the two dead raccoon kits. Without being told, Xingxing went outside for fresh water, this time taking only the medium-sized pail. She made a quick diversion to Father's grave first, so she could tell his spirit about the raccoon kits, about how hard it was to kill them, and how small the remaining one was, how very dear. As she talked, she tenderly brushed away leaves that had fallen on the grave and creepers that were starting to grow across it. Sparrows twittered, magpies raucously clamored, thrushes warbled. The birds let her know that Father understood. She scooted back to the path and hurried down to the pool. She dipped the pail in the water, and oh, what on earth had happened? She stared. The beautiful fish swam into the pail.
Xingxing laughed. "You're so lovely," she said. "White as a peony."
The peony was Xingxing's favorite flower because it had been Mother's favorite flower. She splashed a little water on the dirt at her feet and picked up a stick to draw with. She wrote her own poem. "Fins like red clouds at sunset, eyes like gold tears of joy, sparkling wet. White fish in cold water, happily met."
Then she tipped the pail till it emptied, for who could catch such loveliness? But when she refilled the pail, the fish swam into it again. She emptied it and refilled. Once more, the fish swam into the pail. It would be unwise to ignore such insistence. So Xingxing carried home the pail. But before she entered the cave, she hid the pail behind a boulder and went straight into the back of the cave to the small room with a ceiling so low that you had to crawl within it. That's where Stepmother stored the few bowls and pots remaining from Father's working days. Every now and then she sold one. That was their sole source of income. Stepmother said that Wei Ping would be married before the storeroom was empty, though, so they had no cause for fear. Wei Ping's husband would take care of all of them, and if by some mistake of chance the storeroom emptied prematurely, there were other solutions. Xingxing fervently hoped a husband would come for her half-sister soon, for she knew of the most likely other solution. Stepmother would sell her, and with the money, she could buy a younger girl to help around the cave and still have enough left over to wait for a husband for Wei Ping. Though Xingxing's life had been reduced to hardly more than that of a slave girl since Father's death, she feared being sold. She was clearly a young woman, and at her age, slavery could mean the very worst fate for a female. So Xingxing moved within the black air of the storeroom with the utmost care. It would never do to break a bowl. Her blood banged in her temples. She shouldn't be taking such a risk for a fish. Yet memory urged her on. Her fingers played on every object till she found exactly the bowl she sought, the one with the scalloped edges. She backed out of the storeroom, clutching the bowl to her chest. When she emerged, Stepmother was there waiting. "What could this mean?" she asked in anger. "Am I to change your name from Lazy One to Wicked One?"
Xingxing bowed. "Amusement for my sister," she said.
She ran past Stepmother and brought back the pail. Then she filled the bowl with water and scooped the fish from the pail into the bowl.
"What nonsense is this?" asked Stepmother.
"Let me see," called Wei Ping.
Xingxing carried over the bowl and set it on the keng beside her half-sister. Sunlight danced on the bowl's enamel, where the brilliant yellows and greens and reds played out on the legendary story of the carp at Dragon Gate. The yellow carp fight their way upstream in spring. Some of them try to leap Dragon Gate. According to common belief, a tremendous storm follows this fight and sets afire the tails of those bravest fish that succeed, turning them into dragons. The outside of the bowl pictured a frenzy of jumping fish, the inside, the blaze of a single dragon, and in the very center of the inside was one word, which Xingxing herself had written, "Li," saying that symbol with the tone of the voice dipping and then raising in pitch. It meant carp, saying that same symbol with the tone of the voice falling from a high to low pitch. It meant advantage. The spoken word was a pun about the story illustrated on the bowl, and Xingxing had thought of it herself, much to the delight of Father, who was a master of puns.
"Look at the fins on this fish," said Wei Ping. "They're red already. This fish wants to become a dragon," she smiled.
Xingxing could hardly remember the last time Wei Ping had smiled.
"Struggle has its rewards," said Stepmother, and she looked at Xingxing with approval. Xingxing could not remember Stepmother ever having looked at her with approval. Inside her head, she thanked the lovely fish.